there is a hierarchy here. But we just have the comment.
No, what I mean is that it's really good to have a full signature.
Right. But Stephen just made the comment that this is a really crappy test in the context of what we're trying to do. But there's a very good hierarchy here. No test, crappy test, great test.
Crappy test is a lot faster than great test and no test.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have seen some projects where it was easier to delete the test and start over, unfortunately. But very few of those. So, I've got myself a new test, and I can save it and make sure it runs. So it runs and passes. It's gone up from 3 tests to 4 tests in the file. And I can now look at the common data I've got. I've got the setup, which is checking that the sample data is right. And that's the same in both. And then when I look at this, I'm not using this data variable later on in the test. This is why I said that that's not just some duplicate setup stuff. There's work that's not needed anymore. It wasn't relevant to the later test in that function. So in terms of factoring out the differences, I can just delete all of that. And I'm going to want to turn these first four lines, first four lines into a helper function. Now I could put it in the setup function, as I mentioned earlier, Python test suites have a common code thing. But there are other tests in this file that might be affected if I do that. So I'm just going to put it in a helper function on call. And this is the get base statement. Base speed, maybe? Get base speed. So this should still give me four passing tests if I've done it right. But if it hasn't, something went wrong. So base is that. No section test speed on line 78. Go all the way back to when it's working. That's working. So I'm making an assumption there that this code was just because I'm not needed. So let's start somewhat simple. Let's just pull this stuff out. On the fly demos. Now, is it Paul Finley that says never, no, Damien Conway, never have a real demo. Always be doing
what?
Well, that's on this machine, sorry. Anyway, the point here is I want to end up with a really nice small test that is completely understandable. So this is speed with future data in it. That's the glitch that I'm really trying to deal with. Which I've got by looking at the fact we've got future date and some of that. Yeah. I do indeed. So this should, this time, one step at a time, change one variable, yay, it works. And do the same thing here. Yay. Okay. What about the predictive common code? I have here a brief file pointer, a set test feed ignore date, super, set test feed ignore entry. I'm not using the scrub field at all, so I think I can delete that from this one. Like I don't use the data, which I think is modified by that function. This should also pass. Okay, and the config dot parser line, I suspect that will break if I remove that. Just a hunch. Yep. So it looks like these two lines are common. And what I would describe them as doing is that they set the ignore date config. They give me a configuration that will ignore the date. So I'm going to set something now. And if you don't like camel tape, I hope this won't click you off yet. That's right. One of the things I don't like about this particular code base is it uses global variables. So if I come down here and do that, I now have a function which is pretty much exactly what it needs to do, and it's got no duplicate code in that top section. We're calling a couple of helper functions, but there's not enough to be worried about. And I think this one here actually can be called ignore state. Does not fit ignore. Better than future too, I think, even though it's getting a little lost. Can I break this down any further? This deep copy and scrub would seem to be common. So if I wanted to, this is kind of just getting into standard, reduce simplification in your code.
Also, for a much larger example, this is a very small example, for a much larger example, it's a great idea to actually commit the stuff that works even though I have redundant code.
Yeah.
It's a completely separate change there.
Yeah.
Refactor and keep the test list.
One of the reasons I said this was a bit funny was actually because of deep copy is because there were three tests in the one test. Mm-hmm. So you actually, if you analyze it a bit further, you actually discover that the deep copy before the scrub, before the insert, you don't need it. And you can just pass around a list of variables.
Okay. Right. So having done this, as you say, it's now pretty clear that I'm not using base more than once in this entire function.
Mm.
So I can come up here and I can just pass in the thing to the scrub, and that goes well easily. I can just unwind what I did before, and so I go from data to it to base in this version. Right. So I think that these two tests are much more understandable, even though I haven't added comics to the two tests, than the single larger one. As Stephen said, there are no deep copies anymore, and deep copy is a kind of a sign that you're doing something unusual with the Python. That's really the practice. Now, an example of where I've seen this used, where it was a real problem, was we had a test about this long. On this size font, it would be two times the height of this room. And testing the command line interface for B's of R. And it was creating a branch, and it was moving stuff around, it was adding, committing, and deleting, and it was entirely impossible to tell without reading the entire test, all 60 or 70 odd lines, what the specific thing being tested at that point was. We fixed that by breaking apart and doing exactly this, and we ended up adding the library function, which made it much easier to bring up a working tree that has a file that hasn't been added, and so on. And there was some hit in terms of we're doing more setup now, because we're running a whole bunch of independent tests, but we had library functions that didn't need to invoke these at R and go and do exactly what we needed from within Python. So once we finished putting those in, the whole thing was faster than the single big one was before. And I think that, you know, the questions I normally get from people about this are all about performance, and it's addressable. It's just a matter of looking at what you're doing and really taking time to understand how many layers are being hooked in. Any questions?
It's not something that when you find bugs, so bugs don't occur when it doesn't take a little bit of time. So, you're not managing doing your setup for all combinations before the operation.
So, I think there's two different things you're looking at there. One is how do you find new bugs by using a testing approach? And the other one is how do you make sure that you don't allow a regression to occur because you're not testing the thing that was actually triggering it. So on the latter, if you have a use case that you want people to be able to do that involves more than one step by the user, by all means, have a user-level test, a smoke test, an integration test that just does this use case. But it's not actually going to help you diagnose what's gone wrong very well. Because you're going to have to get halfway through this thing and pause the program and go and fiddle on this and look at what's going on and really understand it. You should have a separate test for each component. In fact, you should have several separate tests down each component that really exercise what's going on. If you identify a bug in that big use case, write a test for the exercise of the bug. Set it up with state that will trigger the bug in the function that is faulty.
Yeah, another way of saying, you know, we've got this really long convoluted setup. Got it. At the end of that setup, your system is going to be in a particular state. And then when you do this one action in that particular state, a defect happens and it doesn't arrive in the state that you expected. Okay? So then you look at, can we refactor our system so that we can arrive in that particular formatted state efficiently? Sometimes the answer is no. And it might be no for political reasons, but I'll protect the one as well. Sometimes, you put up the long setup and the long test. But it's often the case that Rob was saying, you can write yourself a library function which will allow you to put the system in the exact state you need. When they're testing CPUs, for example, there's normally two pins on a CPU labeled don't connect anything. And they're used to shift bits into, shift bits into all of the bits in the CPU to get it into an exact state. So that they can put one value on the address bus, do one clock cycle, and have the CPU do one instruction. And then they suck all the space back out and check it. Okay? So it's sometimes the case that you put in the effort, and that costs them a lot of gas.
Yeah.
But the alternative, let's see if we can find a combination of opcodes that will get it into that state that we want it there.
Yeah.
And okay, so that's where I was going to jump in. One of the things we've got in the paper is using random data to find a small testing subset of data. With that particular problem where you've got this setup, with the first crash you probably find that you've got one module becoming suspicious. So if you have a way of feeding that module random data until you can find the crash, and you actually do it. Gus was looking at me because Gus knows where I'm going. Well, Gus,
he's not going to want
to register. I better... You feed it random data. Until you find the data that actually causes that breakage, then that data becomes part of the test suite data. So it's repeatable in that way.
Yeah.
So
the most important question is that snapshot
is
repeatable.
That's
why it's
random.
That's why it's random.
That's why it's random. If we make sure. One of the things we were talking about this is that day-to-day testing with random data is a really bad idea because if you do find a bug, if it's truly random data, having it truly correct.
It's
slow. So the particular thing I had was a this algorithm, and I found that it actually crashed. And I actually thought I had full test coverage as far as I was concerned. I had test coverage every line, or so I thought. And by generating random string data to test with this thing, I found a couple of cases of crash. Those streams were actually printed out with the first crash, put those in the test suite, and
That's actually quite similar to what I did previously, where a cat's in that sequence of events,
yeah,
and then going back and finding the minimum step.
Yeah, exactly. It's more original than stuff.
Yeah.
But the key distinction is that having large tests will tend to take a long time to execute and are non-deterministic doesn't help you. It might flare up with an error once in a time, but one of the key things you want tests to do is to help you diagnose problems. A test that went something wrong, that doesn't help you fix the problem. A test that says, expected this, from this state, got this, here's a trace back, here's a core dump, here's the database log file preserved on this from before and after the state. This is a database example, but that sort of depth of information, bang, you can take that, you can look at it, you can spend a week if you need to, but you've got all the information there to recreate, figure out, bang, you can fix it.
One of the things I see quite often is test suites that just pump out piles and piles of this test pass, that test pass. I'm actually perfectly happy with a test that goes at the end of it, or spins a thing, and then at the end of it, it says everything passed. If it fails, I want a lot more information than just it passed.
There's nothing worse than running 4,000 tests, have two of them fail, and you have to go back through a couple of megabytes worth of verbal diarrhea to find the 2,000.
I think we should probably stop at this point. We are obviously all very keen to talk about this, and perhaps you can grab us now and we can talk 101.
And what's the paper tomorrow?
Come to the paper tomorrow. All of this stuff we've been talking about is part of that.
Okay, so appreciation and all that.